Now, the issue of reopening schools for in-person teaching and learning has been a divisive issue for teachers, administrators, and parents as the COVID-19 pandemic continues. In Wisconsin, the state's largest teachers union is demanding that schools go entirely virtual out of concern for the safety of teachers, students, and staff. Madison and Milwaukee school districts have already decided to be entirely online, at least to start the school year. On the other side of the issue are teachers, parents, and administrators who argue that virtual learning isn't as effective as learning in a classroom. Some school districts like Toma have already reopened for some in-person learning. Wisconsin's not the only state tackling this issue. States like Florida have seen a major outcry over its decision to reopen schools this fall as the number of coronavirus cases spike across the country. John B. Diamond is the Kellner Family Distinguished Chair in Urban Education and Professor of Education and Educational Leadership and Policy Analysis and a faculty affiliate in Afro-American Studies and Educational Policy Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. John, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I don't know if anybody has the perfect answer, but what are you hoping district policymakers are thinking about as they think about how to reopen this fall?
I mean, I think first and foremost for me is really trying to take politics out of the decision making as much as possible. I think we've had sort of a national discourse, a state and local discourse that has in some ways been impacted by political decisions rather than health decisions. And so first and foremost, I think the health and safety of the students, teachers, administrators, custodial workers, and everybody who's involved in education, as well as families and parents are really important to keep in mind.
Now, if schools are going virtual, they've at least had some time to prepare. Do you have any lessons that you think we should be learning from the rapid switch to virtual as COVID-19 was first hitting?
I mean, I think this is really unprecedented, and I think schools in many places have responded well under the circumstances. I think there are three things that I think people should be thinking about, and those are thinking about the resources needed, the relationships that are necessary, and sort of thinking about reflective practice. And when I talk about resources, I'm thinking about one of the challenges that we've seen is that the resources in our schools are unequally distributed across our communities, across our schools. And so some communities were able to adapt more quickly because they had an infrastructure and a set of resources that allowed them to do that. And other districts struggled in making those kind of rapid changes. So I think it's important for us to keep in mind that resources have to be sort of front and center. I guess the second thing is thinking about relationships. What are the relationships like in your community between teachers and administrators, between the district and the school, between the school and the community, and between teachers and parents, and trying to make sure that there's trust in those relationships and that there's a sort of sense of relational trust that can be built for people across the community. And then the final thing I think about is reflective practice. Like, how can we be very cognizant of what we learned in the spring and what we can take from that to sort of improve what happens this fall.
Talking to John Diamond with UW-Madison. He's an education professor there, talking about what needs to happen to reopen schools. And if schools do go virtual, how to make the best of it. You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Do you want your school to reopen in person? Your school as a teacher, a staffer, a parent, a kid. If virtual is what's happening, how do you think it can work best? Call 800-642-1234. John, Wisconsin's known, unfortunately, for a big outcome disparity among students by race. What are your thoughts on making sure that this situation doesn't take that and make it even worse?
I mean, I think one of the big challenges that we face right now is that, again, as I was saying, the resources are unequally distributed. So districts and schools have to make sure that they're not exacerbating the problem by not providing the resources necessary. I think one of the challenges with virtual learning is not everybody has equal connectivity, right? And so if you think about across urban, suburban, and rural contexts, for example, we have very disparate sort of resources. So I think it's very important to make sure that those resources become more equally distributed. And that means paying attention to both where resources are not as abundant, and also paying attention to people who may take advantage of their position to hoard educational opportunity. I know there's been some discussion, for example, about educational pods where parents are trying to hire individual teachers to work with them and their own kids in their own home, paying exorbitant amounts of money and thinking about pooling those resources to make that happen. I think it's really important for us to watch out for those kind of things happening. The other thing I think about with regard to resources and communities is thinking that all communities have assets. There's work by people like Terrence Green that look at community-based equity audits to see where the resources are in a community, see where they're inequitably distributed, and try to sort of mitigate those kinds of challenges.
On a raw resource level, schools are trying to get ready for in-person at some point, which, you know, involves maybe equipment, spacing out classrooms, stuff that takes money. They're also trying to be prepared for a quality virtual education, which in terms of technology costs money. Is the money there from the federal government, the state government, whatever, to do either of those things, much less prepare for both?
I mean, one of the challenges that we have right now is the money really isn't there, right? Because one of our, you know, because we've not necessarily done the best job of managing COVID, we have some economic challenges. There are not necessarily more resources being distributed. And the extent to which we've gotten really good guidance, as well as resources and leadership from the federal and state level, has not always been the best. So I think we're really challenged by a number of different factors at the moment that I think require, you know, sort of rapid changes and adaptation without a lot of resources. So I think that's one of our core challenges at the moment, to try to figure out how to address those challenges and how to be thinking strategically about where the resources are needed and trying to get the resources to the folks who need to get access to them.
Looking at the health side of things, every state is dealing with this. I want to give a listen to one state, a Missouri Governor Mike Parson, talking about how COVID-19 impacts kids. Here's a listen.
These kids have got to get back to school. They're at the lowest risk possible. And if they do get COVID-19, which they will, and they will when they go to school, they're not going to the hospitals. They're not going to have to sit in doctor's office for days. They're going to go home, and they're going to get over it. And most of it all proves out to be that way, if you look at the science of it.
That's Missouri Governor Mike Parson talking on a local radio program there. Do you worry about the health impact? I know your focus is education policy, but do you worry about the health impacts, again, maybe toward communities we've seen more vulnerable to COVID-19?
Indigenous communities, Black communities, Latinx communities are disproportionately impacted. But we also know that, you know, the white community has the most cases, right? And so one of the things that I think we really have to avoid is forgetting about the health consequences. Even if a child comes home and doesn't become deathly ill, they still can pass it on to family members. They still can pass it on to other people. And you have to remember that schools are filled with children, but they're also filled with adults, right? And those people are also vulnerable. So we really have to make sure that we keep first and foremost in the forefront of our minds the health of our people in our schools, in our communities. And the faster we get the disease under control, the faster we get the pandemic under control, then the other problems start to fall by the wayside, right? Then schools can reopen. Then businesses can reopen. Then people who are, you know, sort of really trying to avoid wearing masks and don't have to wear masks, right? So you sort of get the problems out of the way, but the first step is to worry about the health and getting the pandemic under control, and then you move forward. And I also feel like that statement was a bit dishonest. I think it really, it's either short-sighted or dishonest. I think we have to deal with the reality and the science as opposed to the politics.
We're talking to John Diamond, professor of education at UW-Madison. We are talking about the challenges facing schools this fall. Do they reopen with in-person classes? Do they have virtual classes? Some mix of the two, different states, different districts, taking different approaches to this. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to see happen in your school? If you're going to school yourself, if you're a parent, if you're a teacher, a staff member, what do you want to see happen? What is happening in your district? If you have experience now, unexpected experience, maybe dealing with virtual education, how has it worked for you? How has it worked for your school? What could make it better if it has to happen again this year? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also share your thoughts on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about how schools across the state and country are deciding whether to reopen for the fall for in-person instruction. If they're going to go virtual, online, some combination of the two. Our guest is John Diamond, education professor at UW-Madison, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. If you're involved in schools as a student, teacher, parent, you name it, or concerned community member, what do you want to see happen? What factors should districts consider when they think about reopening? What precautions should be taken for in-person education? What could improve online education in a pinch? Call 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Jamie is with us in Mount Horeb. Jamie, hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
What do you want to bring up, Jamie?
Yeah, hi. I had a question for the speaker. Thank you for his participation. My question is for, I'm wondering if he feels as though there should be different approaches based upon our children's ages. So, for example, our youngest students, kindergarten through third grade, that cannot be left at home alone during the day and have two working parents. I'm really struggling with this decision. The alternatives are I send my children to a child care center, and I'm having a hard time understanding why that's any different than necessarily a school, and why putting a child care center teacher with a group of students is more risky or less risky, or, you know, the risks, the pros and cons of that. And child care centers have been open throughout this pandemic. And then in addition to that, if we don't send them to child care centers, trying to find that alternative child care solution. You know, I know we have a summer nanny who is a teacher. Obviously, our teachers are going to be back in the classrooms, albeit virtually. But many of us use college students or high school students for nannies, none of which will be available. So for working parents, it's really that struggle of, for, you know, myself having a kindergarten, second grade, and fourth grader who cannot be left at home alone. What are the options for me?
Jamie, thank you so much for that call. And Jamie's not alone, certainly, John. That factor of, you know, parents can't necessarily stay at home with their kids if they got to work.
Right. And I think it does matter what level the young people are. I have a high school son who, you know, he can be here and he can learn a lot of what he would have learned in the regular classroom. But I think she raises a really good point about the fact that some community centers have been open. There are opportunities to sort of think more broadly about where educational spaces might be. My colleague Bianca Baldrige has done a lot of work around community-based education spaces. And over the summer, I know in Madison, Lucia Community Center and other centers have been open, and they do sometimes provide additional spaces that can be utilized. So I think we need to be thinking holistically about what are the library spaces, church spaces, synagogues, other spaces in the community that might serve part of this purpose, and to what extent, if schools are not open, might we take advantage of what community resources and assets do exist? But I do think there are tough decisions to be made all around.
Jamie, thanks for calling. Good luck to you and everybody else in that situation. We'll go to John with us now in Madison. John, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Say, I was wondering, in an ideal world, what should be the federal and state government's responsibilities in this? I know that the narrative often pits teachers against parents in the responsibility of taking care of the kids. But, I mean, could the government simply offer better pandemic assistance so that parents don't have to make difficult choices like sending kids to school or being able to work?
John, thanks for the call. John Diamond, what do you think?
I mean, I think one of the ways that we can think about this is to look internationally at how other countries have handled the pandemic and think about what have been the implications in those spaces. What has worked well? What hasn't worked well? What are our scientists telling us? What are our medical experts telling us about what will work? And again, getting things under control is really important. The other challenge is we've asked state governments, for example, to come up with guidelines, but they've had to move really quickly as well. And so one of, you know, the challenges for them is that they're not used to moving that quickly. So I think the guidelines and the supports have not necessarily been as rapid as we would have liked, but I think there's still time for states to listen to what's happening in local context, listen to parents, listen to teachers, listen to administrators, and try to make to provide as much support as they possibly can. But again, I think a big part of our challenge is trying to get things under control so that we can move forward in the safest possible way.
Thanks a lot for that call. John, in our last couple of minutes, I think a lot of people have a feeling, last minute or so, I should say, a feeling of fear that our kids are going to lose a year of education. They're going to fall behind. What do you think about that?
I mean, I think the consequences of making the wrong decisions on it from a health standpoint are, I think, much more important than necessarily some loss in learning. I think we have to realize that as much as possible, we need to be providing the social emotional support that young people need to get through this period. We need to be providing them with as much education as possible. And I think our educators, who are sort of on the front lines of this, have been doing a great job of trying to create as much learning as possible. And in some ways have created new and innovative ways to try to teach, paring back instruction to focusing on the core of what really needs to be learned, thinking about learning as opposed to grades, thinking about new ways to build relationship. So I think we can have some solace in the fact that young people are resilient. And as long as we keep them healthy, they still can have very bright futures, even if they lose out on some learning.
John, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
We've been talking to John B. Diamond, the Kellner Family Distinguished Chair in Urban Education and Professor of Education in Educational Leadership and Policy Analysis and Faculty Affiliated African-American Studies and Educational Policy Studies at UW-Madison. He joined us today to talk about how schools across the state are determining whether to reopen for in-person teaching in the fall amid the COVID-19 pandemic. You can still share your thoughts on the Ideas Network Facebook page. By the way, Thursday at this time, we'll talk to an education reporter about what schools outside of Wisconsin are doing to try to get ready for the school year and how school districts can improve their virtual learning.